You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Katie Klein, and this is Field Talk, a podcast in which we explore the work of authors whose studies have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Stefan Gelsich, Natalio Godoy, and Juan Carlos Castilla from Pontificia Universidad Católica de Chile, whose article was published in the September issue of Ecological Applications. Gelsich and colleagues interviewed 123 artisanal speargun fishers from six cities in Chile. The researchers inquired on topics such as the largest fish ever caught and the changes in species captured, and they compared the results to current data and data from the World Spearfishing Championships of 1971 and 2004 in Chile. They found that a majority of the spearfishers noticed a significant decrease in both the abundance and diversity of reef fish in the area, corresponding with data suggesting the overexploitation of the area's main reef fish species. Thanks for speaking with me today. How are things in Santiago?
Things are fine coming into spring, so we're all quite happy now.
So, have any of you ever been spearfishing yourself or seen it firsthand?
Yes, at least two of us.
Two of us!
Yeah. We do a bit of spearfishing, Natalio and myself. We do mainly freediving spearfishing. We have done it since the university in different places. It's a marvelous sport, we think, anyway, when you take it as a sport.
It seems very athletically difficult, at least coming from someone like me who doesn't do a lot of sports. So, yeah, that's impressive.
It's very common in Chile, extremely common in Chile, but particularly in central and northern Chile, because southern Chile is a little bit chilly, water. And so in central and northern Chile, that we don't know exactly how many, but, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of spearfishing people. Sometimes they use spearfishing, you know, for getting their food, and sometimes, you know, for local markets.
So is this something that's historic to Chile?
I think it's pretty historical because, you know, spearfishing is new, last 40, 50 years, something like that. But, you know, the extraction of coastal fisheries in Chile and Peru is very, very long, you know, thousands of years, which people have dedicated to that. But spearfishing, you know,
has sort of intensified in the last 30 years. I would say, since we've got the first diving suits, there's been an intensification of spear gun fishing.
What are the different types of methods used?
In Chile, there's two main methods. One is free diving, snorkeling, and the other one is juca diving. It's with compressed air. It's not scuba in Chile, but it's juca, so it's compressed air that comes from a boat.
So what are some of the areas known around the world for spearfishing, and what are their regulations like?
Spearfishing is done in Australia, Peru, Tasmania,
California,
Pacific Islands, and different countries have different regulations, of course. So in some countries, there are bans for scuba spearfishing, for using scuba diving gear to spearfish. In other countries, there's size limits, there's restrictions on the maximum number of fish that can be caught. In Chile, currently, we have none of those regulations in place, unless in diving championships where for one species, you've got a maximum number of individuals which can be collected.
How has spearfishing led to the overexploitation of reef fish in Iquique, Chile, where the world championships were held?
These championships, you know, they last only for 2 days, something like that. You know, the real effect of the championships is not probably, we don't know, but it's not very important, you know, from the locality point of view. More important is the local population that live there, you know, and sort of spear fishing year around, and that's much more important. So what is really needed in places like Iquique or northern Chile is more regulation, as we suggest in the paper.
Which methods of spearfishing do you think contributes more to reef fish population decline then?
This was a paper that had a lot to do with perceptions as well, and artisanal fishermen's perceptions. One of the drivers of degradation of reef fish was effectively the use of juca diving gear to spear gun. Because what happens is that when you're using just a snorkel, you have to go sort of up and down, okay? And there's a limit of how deep you can go, etc. When you're using the juca diving gear, you can be underwater for 3 or 4 hours just spearfishing.
What are some of the limitations on regulating spearfishing in Chile?
I would say that one of the crucial points was that no one was aware of this reef fish resource crisis. So I think the starting point, the big barrier, was that we had no information. There was very little information in developing countries like Chile, and with fisheries as these reef fisheries, there's very little information on official landings. This information is scattered around the country. We're not quite sure how much it is. So we had to use these multiple sources of information to understand the state and the changes on these reef fish populations over time.
This is a case in not only in Chile, but many, many developing countries around the world in which you have fisheries which are dataless. I mean, that's not really information, very little information. This first step regarding, you know, spear fishing in Chile, we think is being done through this paper. But before that, there were no data. And you have to remember that in many cases, this activity is done on a sustainable basis for the people who live in this area. So it's not for the big markets around the world. It's not for Japan or Washington or New York or whatever. You know, it's local subsistence sort of fisheries.
You mentioned that one of the next big steps and that you've done in this paper is collecting the right types of information. You did that by interviewing the different spear gun fishers in the cities.
Yeah, this paper, we used different sources of information. One source of information were fishermen's perceptions. The information on fishermen's perceptions related more to the state of the fishery and changes in maximum sizes of catches, as you mentioned, or in the maximum number of catches. There's very little we can get from there that talks about the community structure. Today, Natalio is doing his PhD and he's looking into community structure and how some of these communities are structured and the effects of fishing over these community structures. And we're actually having empirical data. We're following these fishermen and seeing exactly how much they catch and how much they don't and how heavy these organisms are and how often they go and where they go. And then we'll have a better picture, more of a community-wide effects of the fishing.
In tropical countries in which you have coral communities, it is easier to detect changes in the ecosystem as compared to Chile, because in those communities, when you eliminate carnivores or herbivores or fishes like that, you know, you see immediately the answer in the community point of view.
As quoted in your study, one hookah diver said, "Acha is a fish that has been almost totally exterminated in the last 10 years. If you catch one, you are extremely lucky. I have only caught 3 in my life. However, when I was a boy, we used to eat a lot of acha." Did you hear many stories like this from the older spear fishers who noticed a significant decline in certain species of fish throughout their lifetime?
Yes, many stories. Listening to these stories actually was what led us to start exploring the use of attitudes as a way to sort of understand the reef fisheries crisis, let's say, in Chile. These stories led us to believe that there was a problem. It happened with acha, it happened with the bejeperro, the sheep head, a bit less with the other emblematic species, that is what we call the vieja negra, that's grouse negra. But yeah, it was a common story, not only among the oldest interviewees that were, 75 years old, but also among divers that are 50, 45 year old. And in fact, a lot of fishermen really engaged with this study, even if they're still diving, because they see this on a day-to-day basis. They dive. Diving is a visual activity. So they really see this and they're relating to these results.
Another quote comes from Raul Choque, the Chilean snorkeling spear gun world champion in 1971, who noted, "Before 1985, the main target species were large carnivore rocky fish. However, today we catch anything. Why are spearfishers being less discriminating about their catch now?"
Yeah, there is less catch available. So the whole market has shifted in a way. So now these carnivore species are more expensive, they're more elite. These are local market sold species now, our herbivore species. And this has changed in not that long time. When we were in spear gun diving at university with Natalio, no one used to eat jerguilla. And that was only, 10 or 15 years ago. So this change has been quite fast in terms of the composition of the catch. And today, when you go to lots of the fishing coves, the caletas, as we call them in Chile, in central and northern Chile, jerguilla is one of the most available fish. So it is notorious even for us.
Also, as part of your study, you looked at results from the first 20 divers from the Iquique Bay Spearfishing Championships and found that the average mass of reef fish captured decreased, the percentage of discarded fish decreased, and the total number of species caught decreased drastically in the 30-year span. What do you think caused these changes?
That's a difficult question.
we associate lots of these changes to sort of the conditions, the weather conditions, the sea conditions. Most of the rules behind these championships we try to standardize. This is why we chose these two championships. So we associate this as one more element. It's not the only element that's signaling some crisis in these reef fish populations, but it's one more element, and we associate this with the less abundance of reef fish in the sea. this data I'm going to give you now is not published in the paper, but 20 best divers in the world, only like 30 or 40% had valid reef fish species. That means species over 1 kilogram. And these are the best 20. It's not me diving. So that this really means that the size of these reef fish has decreased over the years. So we take this sort of as extra evidence.
What changes in spearfishing regulations would you like to see in Chile and even around the world if you want to go that far?
In Chile, we've got a unique opportunity for regulating spear gun fishing. Okay, this is the first evidence that there is a crisis with the resource. But in Chile, we also have a policy that has granted territorial user rights to artisanal fishermen. Okay, so in this case, fishermen unions own areas of seabed. And in these areas, we've got published evidence, actually, in ecological applications that the diversity and the size of reef fishes is greater within these areas managed by fishermen. Because these act a little bit as marine reserves for reef fish. Currently, there's no regulation about spearfishing within these areas that have, in the last 10 years, act sort of as an informal type of MPA for these reef fishes. Today, there's a lot more market pressures over these reef fish. So I think it's really timely to start finding forms to regulate reef fishing within these areas. This could be a starting point for Chile. Not a very conflictual starting point, because you're not starting just talking about bans. You're starting to talk about, okay, there's a way to regulate this that has been coming for the last 10 years, and we have to be prepared now that the markets are opening to regulate this in a more formal way. In addition, from the data we see, I think that a strong conversation with fishermen communities and the Undersecretary of Fisheries is necessary to talk about the use and regulating hookah diving for spearfishing. We really have to sit down and start talking about regulating spearfishing, maybe with size limits, maybe with reproductive periods, maybe only with number of fish you can catch. There's a way forward, and it's a way forward that does not imply just conflict. We're not just standing here and say, look, we need a total ban, because that doesn't work. No one can enforce these bans like this. It has to be something that involves participation.
We would like to stress to you and audiences that territorial user rights that's been established in Chile for the last 15 years, they were not related and connected to fishes, but to benthic resources, you know, mollusks and sea urchins and algae and keyhole limpets and abalone or whatever. We got about, you know, 700 of those areas well established in Chile, not connected with fisheries, with benthic resources. But those areas do exist. They are in the exclusive hands of artisanal communities. And what we're seeing inside those areas, as Stefan pointed out before, is an increase in diversity and size and things like that regarding these fishes. So there's a tremendous possibility here not to use, not to take, but, you know, trying to talk to the government and the communities and see how can we, you know, solve this problem. From outside Chile, from the world, if you like, the concept that, you know, things can be managed, properly managed, you know, if put in exclusive hands of the users. And you start zonating the sea, you know, allocating right into the sea. That could be a way to solve not only this problem, but many problems in the ocean.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today. That was Stefan Gelsich, Natalio Godoy, and Juan Carlos Castilla joining us from Chile to discuss their research on the effects of spearfishing in Chile and their recommendations for changes to spearfishing regulations. I'm Katie Klein, and this has been Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.